Good afternoon. From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Juneau Animal Rescue has finally secured a location for its proposed new animal shelter. Last night, the Juneau Assembly unanimously approved leasing a parcel of city property in the Mendenhall Valley to Juneau Animal Rescue to serve as a site of a larger facility for rescued animals. Rick Driscoll, the shelter's executive director, says the approval is a major milestone for making the new shelter a reality.
This was kind of the big step. So we couldn't really launch a capital campaign without having land that we can say we're going to build it on. So everything has led up to this point.
The nonprofit organization has been fundraising to construct a newer, updated facility for the last few years. The current shelter off Glacier Highway was built in 1984 and needs extensive repairs. And the shelter also often finds itself at or near capacity for housing dogs and cats. Driscoll says the assembly's approval means the animal rescue can begin narrowing in on a design for the facility and figure out how much they need to fundraise to make it happen. The proposed new facility would have a better ventilation system to help prevent the spread of diseases and more space for cats, dogs, and smaller animals like rodents and reptiles. The shelter is also interested in creating walking trails in the surrounding area for dogs. Driscoll says a long-term goal is to make the site a campus for all things animal by collaborating with other organizations in Juneau.
Whether that's working with the Capital City Kennel Club or working with Parks and Recreation on a dog park or working with Trail Mix to perhaps do some kind of cool trails out there, the sky's the limit.
Under the approved lease agreement, the shelter will pay $10 a year for the 35-year lease. Driscoll says the organization will share more about the design and fundraising needs for the new shelter as soon as possible. The state of Alaska is considering opening up a new ferry terminal in southeast Alaska. It would connect Alaska's ferries to the lower 48 road system without going through Canada. The idea comes as Alaska continues to struggle with the closure of the ferry terminal at Prince Rupert in British Columbia. Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports that the state is conducting a $500,000 study to see if a terminal on Alaska's side of the border would be better.
For decades, the Alaska Marine Highway System relied on a terminal at Canada's Prince Rupert as its southern road connection. The state has leased the terminal from Canada, but it's been closed for most of the past 6 years. There are numerous complications like infrastructure challenges and disagreements with Canada over border control responsibilities. The dock needs over $20 million in repairs, and Alaska's aging fleet isn't certified for international travel anymore.
If we can put a man on the moon, we ought to be able to solve the problem between here and 90 miles away at Prince Rupert.
That's Jim Clark, the former chief of staff for Governor Frank Murkowski, who worked on the ferry system for decades. Clark was speaking at a regional development meeting in Ketchikan last year. Prince Rupert's closed terminal has been a hot topic in many Southern Southeast meetings. Some, like Robert Venables of the Southeast Conference, say they're not ready to give up on Prince Rupert.
It's going to take everyone to lean into this thing. It is problematic at the highest levels of bureaucracies to try to get back to Prince Rupert. But we're going to give it our best push, and we're going to keep pushing until it happens.
The Prince Rupert connection isn't completely off the table, but Alaska would need a federal waiver to bypass a requirement that steel materials for repairs be American-made. The state has requested this waiver in recent years without success. Canadian officials have opposed the requirement because the terminal is on Canadian soil. And so, the state's Department of Transportation has considered Hyder, Alaska, about 90 miles from Ketchikan, as an alternative.
Fortunately, we have a lot of data for this site.
Kirk Miller is an engineer with the state's Department of Transportation.
We've done engineering up and down this whole causeway. The island, I've been working on their harbor and all these projects there for years. So we have data, but not quite enough.
He was speaking about the site last year. This October, a new feasibility study began and is expected to be completed in mid-2026. The study is looking at all the details, like where a dock would go, the water depths, dredging, and environmental concerns. It's estimated the new terminal would cost about $30 million. It's located about the same distance to Seattle as Prince Rupert, about 1,000 road miles. Prince Rupert is much larger than Hyder and has more amenities. But Hyder would be under Alaska's control.
I just want to really voice my support for Hyder.
That's Bob Horchover, a member of the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, which makes recommendations to the state. He was speaking at a board meeting in July.
In Hyder, we own the land, and Most of the work is already done. It's a very adaptable situation. So for me, there isn't even a discussion.
The state approved a 20-year ferry plan this year, based in part on a survey of over 2,500 Alaskans. Many respondents said restoring a road connection in Southeast was a priority. And local governments agree. The Ketchikan Gateway Borough passed a resolution supporting a Hyder terminal if Prince Rupert doesn't work out. Nearby Metlakatla feels the same. Mayor Albert Smith said that having no Prince Rupert connection has hurt his town's economy.
With fishing, the rail system is real close to Rupert, so we could use the ferry to transport fish, and then it's connected right to the port gates. And it's more the fishing way.
At least one Alaska lawmaker is on board, Republican Representative Jeremy Bynum of Ketchikan.
I'm going to be a fierce fighter here on the legislative side to make sure we can get the funding in place that we need.
Whether Alaska rebuilds the Prince Rupert connection or builds a new terminal at Hyder, officials say either option would take 5 to 8 years to complete the necessary infrastructure work. Reporting for Coast Alaska in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
And what could be Alaska's first official hybrid electric fishing boat is one step closer to hitting the water. KCAW's Hope McKinney reports the boat is part of a pilot program based in Sitka to address high-cost fuels for the fishing fleet and maybe make fishing just a little bit greener.
It's a cold, snowy day down by Sitka's marine haulout. Inside the giant, unheated commercial workspace, I can still see my breath as men weld and work on boat parts around me. Off to one side is a giant engine, or should I say two engines, one white and one dark gray, stuck together in an intricate pattern of metal and tubing. This engine is hybrid electric and is about to be put in the 50-foot fishing vessel, Mirage.
We hauled out at the end of October, early November. Cracked a lot of eggs, making this big omelet.
Ben Mathias has been working to adapt and install the hybrid engine for the boat's owner the past couple of months. He says they're pioneering this technology to the fleet to prove that hybridization is viable.
Diesel, you know, is reliable, but as we're looking to save beyond those low-hanging fruits, where do we go? And we decided that diesel electric is the way forward.
The program is funded by a $500,000 grant from the Department of Energy and includes converting two hybrid commercial fishing boats and one fully electric mariculture boat. While the initial investment is high, Mathias says hopefully it'll pay off for fishermen down the line.
The margins for fishing are getting tighter. You know, the price per pound of what people can market the fish for or what's purchased at the plant is lower, and fuel and all operating costs are higher. So as we move forward to the next options to save and become more profitable, this is it.
Another benefit is helping to address the climate impacts of fossil fuels and make it healthier for fishermen on board who are often exposed to harmful fumes. Fishermen might even be able to market their product as greener than the next guy and may be able to get a better price for their fish.
We think there are health benefits for people, for fishermen, as well as for the ocean and for people's bottom line.
That's Linda Bankin, a commercial fisherman and director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, or ALFA, which is pioneering the program. She says they've worked for years to find ways for the fleet to operate more efficiently by changing certain boat operations or making certain modifications to vessels. And after a lot of input from people at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, they identified hybrid technologies as the next best step for fishing boats operating out of small communities.
At a national level, there's definitely a lot of interest across the country in hybrid or fully electric vessels. Folks in Maine at the Island Institute there have been working with their fleet to look at electric and hybrid. There's some work being done in Norway on electric and hybrid or alternative fuels, but up here we're really breaking new ground.
Jeff Turner owns the Mirage. He fishes for spot prawns, salmon, and halibut throughout the Gulf of Alaska. Turner says he used to longline out of Kodiak, which took about 3 days to travel to one way. At the end of the trip, he says, he'd rack up about $3,500 in fuel costs. If he could knock that down by a couple thousand dollars by long lining on a battery, he says that could be huge.
Hybridization for me started with, oh my God, I'm spending so much on fuel. There's got to be a better way. This grant money came up and there was interest. I raised my hand and said, I'll try this. I'd love to save fuel.
Throughout the process, Turner says he's been learning a lot, and there's still a lot left to learn. But he says he's ready to install the engine and hopefully hit the water in January.
I'm really excited about the data they're going to collect, how it changes the way I fish, and what other people can do with it too. So, I mean, it's exciting to every day I go out, I'm fishing and researching. So it's kind of nice that way too.
Matthias, the marine electrician, says that collecting data is going to be important when proving to other fishermen that converting to hybrid energy will be worth the investment.
I'm excited to see the technology move forward, advance the fleet. We're running mostly on 100-plus-year-old technology, moving boats around. And I can understand, you know, Grandpa did it, Dad did it, it worked for them, and it's working for me, type deal. But as we advance to new technologies, I'm excited to see this stuff come forward. I look forward to serving the fleet, both in a traditional sense and then in this new realm of technology.
After the Mirage hits the water, Matthias will be working on installing an electric propulsion system on a gillnetter from Juneau and setting up a fully electric mariculture vessel in Kodiak. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Hope McKenney.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 6 degrees and overcast. That looks like temperatures in the teens through Saturday, and then it might get quite a bit colder Sunday. You're listening to KTOO.